I done the post match in like 4 minutes, and I thought, right, what the hell will I say now? Apart from just slate the team, because it was like absolutely nothing. So I feel rotten the night I went to graduation at the school with Dan, had a big buffet, and I think I've bloody gave myself food poisoning.
Fuck's
the pains in my stomach are unbelievable, man. I'm not joking.
I'm no editing at the night because I can't be arsed. And the Apprentice final's on too.
Oh, do you watch that, aye?
I don't know why. It's like watching Rangers and The Apprentice is like Stockholm Syndrome. I'm about to start watching Banshee again. Oh. Just for Rebecca.
On that note, I'm away.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
Hi everyone and welcome to the next episode of the iReady podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek and with me is my co-host Dave. How are you doing, Dave?
Well, Derek, I think I'm the same as you and every other Rangers fan out there with a feeling of dread and deja vu is all I can say that I'm feeling at the moment because I think this is going to be a bit of a grumpy pod, isn't it?
It's what's going to be called a Chips and Haim podcast. We'll just get it done at the bare minimum and we'll get it out again.
Exactly.
And we'll get the podcast out as well.
But hey, see, we're going to be laugh already. There you go. It's not that bad.
So without further ado, we'll get into this absolute stramash that is the four games we've got to cover. We'll go down the tunnel and onto the park. So, the first game we've got to cover, and Dave, it's probably the only shining light of the four games we've got to cover. It was Saturday the 30th of March. It was a 3-1 win at home against Hibs in the Premiership. So, we had two changes from the Benfica game. We lined up Butland, Tavernier, Goldson, Suter, Barisic, Lundstrom, Cantwell, Diamande, Silva, Dessers and Wright. On the subs bench, we had McCrory, Lawrence, Matondo, Seymour, Sterling, Balogun, King, Raskin and McCausland. Now, Dave, I believe you were away on your holidays by this point. So, did you get to see the game at all?
I certainly did, Derek. I did get to see the game and still at that time, you know, in high spirits. Even although we had been knocked out of Europe by a very, very good team, I was still feeling very hopeful, as I'm sure every other Rangers fan out there was as well.
Yes, so, I mean, it was a decent performance overall. It wasn't great. It was decent, I would have said. You know, it was perfunctory. We wanted the win. We got the win. That was it. Chips and Haim almost as well.
Yep.
But I'm not going to cover the games tonight in great depth, simply because the three games after that, I'm scunnered with them, and we've got other things to talk about as well. But we'll go into the kind of key points of it. As I said, I mean, it was a decent performance. The referee and the linesman and all the officials in general were absolutely shambolic in this game. 16th minute, Diamande robs the Hibs attacker of the ball in our box. He drives it forward 20 yards. A fantastic long ball to the left side for the on-running Dessers, who collects it, takes it to the byline, cuts it back, lays it off, and we end up having a shot which was cleared off the line. In that whole move, Suter went down with a head knock as well, and the play raged on. I mean, I thought the new directive was, as soon as there was a head knock, you had to stop the game, which will become a feature in the next game as well against Celtic. But Diomande had a shot which was saved. Hibs retained the ball and eventually play was stopped for treatment for Suter. In the meantime, when that was happening, there was a long, long, long VAR check for the incident on Suter that just happened. And it was quite clear he was elbowed right in the face as he was jumping. The leading arm by the defender, Suter was clearly taken out. Obviously, all the Hibs fans and the Celtic fans were claiming it wasn't a penalty, but it was a penalty. It was a stonewall one, Dave.
Well, totally. And as you say, the VAR check did go on for a while, but every single angle that you looked at it that they were able to show it, there was no denying. It was a clear blow to the face inside the box. This whole thing about was it meant or was it not, that just doesn't matter anymore in football. It was a clear blow to the face or the head inside the penalty area, so it was a clear-cut penalty.
Yeah, so on the 20th minute, a penalty was eventually awarded to us. Now, Hibs ended up landing themselves in a wee bit of hot water by this by putting a tweet out saying, penalty to Rangers, who had 20 minutes. Now, I'm not sure if there's any SPFL punishment coming for that one there, but once again, it's a long list of managers or clubs of our opposition teams suggesting that the refs are biased to Rangers. It's inexcusable. They shouldn't be doing it. These managers made post-match comments about penalties given to us. When it's a clear-cut penalty, why can they argue about that? They've tried to be a wee bit funny here. Hibs fans lapped it up. They loved it. Mm-hmm. But you can't go around saying things like that. But anyway, on the 21st minute, up steps Tavernier. He had a very short run-up. It was a very poor penalty, and he misses, but Wright follows it up with a rebound and puts it into the back of the net. And then, for an unknown reason, nobody had a clue what was going on. There was another lengthy VAR check, and the goal was eventually ruled out because Wright was deemed to be encroaching. Now, he was on the line at best. The still they showed us was actually taken just after the ball had been kicked.
Yep.
So it was the wrong frame once again. How many times are VAR going to do this? And the Hibs player was actually further forward than Wright was. So going by the rules, the penalty should have been retaken.
Exactly, yes. Another again, but Derek, even that first instance that you said it wasn't conclusive, it looked as if he was a millimetre inside, but it was at the complete wrong angle also. And as you say, it looked as if the Hibs player was even further in. So how they can come up with that original decision is beyond me. But quite rightly, as you said, it should have been a retake.
Yeah, and all the pundits were baffled by this as well. Yep. It went to Dermot Gallagher on the Monday as well, and he was like, that's just absolutely baffling. So, yeah, not even following the own rules here. But anyway, we never let that get to us because up steps Tavernier on the 26th minute, and he scores a cracker of a goal. Cantwell went down the left, who plays the overlapping Barisic, who plays a cross into the middle, which was kicked away, but only to the right side of the box for Tavernier to volley it into the back of the net. As I said, a cracking finish. Not the first time he's hit a shot on the volley into the back of the net like that. Great goal.
Yep, fantastic goal, fantastic execution, and great timing after what had happened with the penalty and all of that as well. So great to be ahead in the game.
Yes. The game played on. I think Hibs had a couple of half chances. Nothing too major, anything exceptional that Butland had to do. We had a couple of half chances as well. 39th minute, we tried to pass it in the Hibs box. It deflected off the defender and then off the ref. The referee stops play, as he should do, because it hit off him, and he gives the ball to Hibs. Surely that ball should have went to us then. Somebody said it's a rule because it was inside the Hibs box that it hit him. It goes back to the defending team, but I don't know if that's the case or no, but again, it seems weird one to me, that one. But anyway, on the 45th minute, 7 minutes of injury time were given because of all the VAR checks. And on the 47th minute, Hibs drew level and made it one each. So much indecision from our team. Simple ball down the right, Barisic not there. Lundstrom trying to track back. Suter cuts across and he gets turned. Suter leaves a hole in the middle where he should have been rather than coming across. It was passed to the attacker, who's completely unmarked because there's no Suter there. Tavernier gets back and nearly puts him off, but the attacker shoots into the back of the net. So simple, so timid from our defenders again as well.
Shambolic, Derek. Again, all starting from wherever the left back was supposed to be, was nowhere near it. Left Suter completely exposed. He went in for the sliding tackle to try and do something, completely missed it, got left on his backside. But then even that, we still had opportunities to clear it after that. As you say, Tav was in there where Goldson should have been, and he wasn't, trying to defend, and then it was just an easy tapping in the end for the boys. So absolutely shambolic, amateurish defending from us at the back there.
I mean, we've been relatively solid at the back this year, and this is just another feature of the last maybe 6 or 7, 8 games where the defending has just been absolutely abysmal, just complete indecision all around. However, because of that 7 minutes and obviously scoring a goal there, no, the time to reset again, the injury time was still raging on, and Dessers actually put a ball in the back of the net on the 52nd minute to make it 2-1. It was Tavernier to Cantwell on the right, a first time cross to the middle of the box, and Dessers charges through the defenders and headers it in the back of the net. A great goal.
Excellent goal, Derek. I can't take anything away from him. And again, the timing, I think, of the goal was huge for us in this game, because with Hibs getting back into it, for us to score just before half-time was exactly what we were needing. It gave us a total lift. It gave the whole stadium a lift and got everybody up for the second half.
Yes. So into the second half, I think it was really more of the same. We were decent. We weren't great. We did put their keeper under a wee bit of pressure early on. Cantwell had a shot on the edge of the box. Hibs were offering absolutely nothing.
No.
57th minute, Cantwell and Wright off, Lawrence and Sterling on. 67th minute, Barisic off and McCausland on. It was a possible injury for Barisic, but again, he has previous for doing kind of feigning injuries, hasn't he? 79th minute, Silva and Dessers off, Sima and Matondo on. And the 85th minute to wrap up the game, Matondo with an absolute stunner. He gets the ball on the left wing near the box. He cuts inside. He keeps cutting inwards towards the middle. And an absolute stunning strike from the edge of the box into the back of the net. And that wrapped up the game. It was later than we wanted it to be, but it was a cracking way to wrap up the game. 3-1.
Icing on the cake for the game for us, Derek, because as you say, we were in complete control in the second half, deserved more out of it, and then, you know, an absolutely sublime finish by Matondo at the end there, just to finish it off for us with a, you know, an excellent result. And, you know, at that point, Derek, we were still very hopeful. We were getting shots at goal. We were causing teams problems. Defensively, we're still looking a bit dodgy, but still very hopeful at that point.
Yes. And I mean, Hibs offered absolutely nothing in the game. And probably the best part of the game for Hibs was a Hibs player in the first half, I think it was, tried to take a quick free kick in their own half. He blasted the ball. It hit off the head of his own teammate. It completely floored them. And then the ball ended up bouncing back and it done the exact same to another teammate of his behind him. And he was completely taken unaware and it floored him as well. Absolute comedy gold, Dave, wasn't
it? I've never seen anything like that ever while watching a game of football, Derek. Even amateur level, even like watching, you know, at schoolboy level, I've never seen anything like that. You've seen stuff on the internet where players hitting the ball off the bar and it hits them in the head and then hits the post and then goes out and stuff like that. But that was absolutely bizarre the way that panned out. It really was.
Yes. So it was a good win, decent performance, and it lined us up nicely for the next game, which was the big game, Sunday the 7th of April. That was at home against Celtic in the Premiership, where it was a breathless game, Dave, and it was 3-3, wasn't it?
I just want to mention, Derek, being a wee bit selfish and just to give him a wee plug, Craig, at the Bluebell Bar in Los Cristianos in Tenerife, I just want to say thank you for looking after myself and my son, making sure we got a wee seat there and we're in amongst fellow blue noses to watch the match, because the one thing I did not want to do was just go into a normal pub where there could have been a few of them sitting. So thanks very much, Craig. I know he does listen to the podcast. So on you go, Derek.
Jammy bastard. Yeah, so as I said in the post-match, for me it wasn't a must-win game. It was definitely, though, a do-not-lose game, which we'd done just by the skin of your teeth, I felt, as well. I felt it was more on Celtic's onus, given the fact that at the time they were behind us in the league. I know that we had the game in hand, but if we won that, we were sitting 2 points ahead of them. Yeah. They really had to go out and win, even though the last Old Firm game is at Parkhead.
Yep.
A lot of other people seen it the other way. I don't know, Dave, what was your opinion?
I think, Derek, if you'd have said to me before the game we're going to get a draw without actually knowing what had happened in the match, I would have been slightly disappointed, because apart from the Motherwell game, we had been playing some pretty good stuff. We had been beating teams quite easily, and I thought if this was going to be the one time that we're going to beat them or stamp our authority over them, it would be in Ibrox in front of our own fans. Well, we had the chance not to go to top of the league after that game because of the shambles at Dundee, but certainly to put a lot of pressure on them. But going by what you're about to get into and how the game unfolded, I would have taken that at the end like we did. So that's as best as I can put it.
So we lined up with two changes from the Hibs game: Butland, Tavernier, Goldson, Suter, Sterling, Lundstrom, Diamande, Lawrence, Wright, Silva and Dessers. On the subs bench were McCrory, Cantwell, Matondo, Sima, Dow, Balogun, Barisic, King and McCausland. So the first half, an absolutely shocking first half, where the boos rained around Ibrox, quite justifiably, when the whistle blew for half time. We were shambolic at the back, powder puff up front, completely standoffish in between, massive gaps, absolutely no fight in the team, and it's the same players going missing and making the same horrendous mistakes again. And it taken 20 seconds, yes, 20 seconds before our arses collapsed. And unbelievably, Dave, it came from our kickoff.
Yes.
Our kickoff, and 20 seconds later, the ball was in our net. Celtic made it 1-0. We kick off. It went back to our defence. We made it to the halfway line where we lost possession. The ball went back to Joe Hart, who had just a long kick all the way down the park from the middle to the left side. Tavernier completely lost where he was. He was almost casually running back at one point. He realised he was getting caught up behind him. He tried to kick the ball. Maybe a wee bit of fortune, because just the kick trying to knock it out, he's hit it off, mate. How was it? Maeda's legs, I think it was. And it's kind of almost rebounded off him and into the back of the net. Just calamitous, Dave. Absolutely calamitous.
Caught in two minds, and when you're in that position, Derek, you shouldn't be caught in two minds. You should know exactly what it is you were going to do. He thought, do I pass it back to Butland, or do I try and get it out for the throw-in? At the very last minute, changed his mind and went to try and kick it out for a throw-in. As soon as he's done that, Maeda's hit the ball also at the same time. And let's be honest, Derek, it could have went anywhere because it was a ricochet. But unfortunately for us, it absolutely battered right into the back of the net past Butland, and that was us chasing the game from the first minute. Really, really poor by Tav. Like I said, caught in two minds, and that affected him for the rest of the game. I don't care what anybody says, because he was all over the place, especially in the first half after that.
I mean, it's bad enough losing possession, but once again we're losing goals from Celtic having possession deep in their own half. Tavernier, again, his legs have completely gone this season. You've not seen him bolting up and down that wing as much. His tracking back is absolutely abysmal because he's getting beat for pace every single time. His positioning is all over the shop. Dave, we'll get into players at the end of this, this is just typifying what we've seen all season. Anyway, Celtic were battering us at this point. Our heads completely went down. The stadium were completely deflated from that. We never really got going that half at all. 31st minute, a huge save from Butland. Celtic had lots of possession, working the ball from the centre to the right, a cross in and a header that was saved out for the corner. We didn't deal with the corner. Butland had to smother the ball before the player could toe poke it in. There was a VAR check for handball in that as well. It was a clear handball. Goldson jumped up from the corner. His elbows were out. He kind of led with the elbow for some inexplicable reason. It was outstretched. Clear penalty, Dave. As much as we don't like these type of penalties in these new rules, it is the rules. It was a penalty.
Yeah, but it was given, Derek. I don't think anybody had any complaints. Certainly a lot of people shut up after it happened. I would have loved to have seen the fury if it hadn't have been given, to be perfectly honest with you. But it was given correctly, and Celtic had the chance to go two up.
Yep. And they did so on the 34th minute. One of the things to highlight, though, in the 43rd minute, Suter had to go off for bandages with a head knock and blood pouring down his head. This is the type of luck we carry. It wasn't from a challenge from a Celtic player or a flailing arm from a Celtic player that just caught him. It was Goldson's arm that caught him. I mean, how can we get injured like that from our own player, Dave? This is the type of luck we're carrying with injuries.
Exactly. Yep, totally.
The only real decent bit of play we had was in the 46th minute. It was a nice play with the ball fed through to Dessers. Silva then picks it up and he has two close range shots. Both were saved by Hart, and that's how the half ended out. So, as I said, boos raid round the stadium. Yeah. It was an absolute abysmal performance.
It really was. It's one of the worst that we've played all season. I genuinely don't actually think that Celtic were that great. Derek, and a lot of folk might say, no, they pounded us. I really did think we made it so easy for them. I don't think we could believe their luck as to how badly we were playing. The amount of mistakes that we were making, the amount of misplaced passes, the opportunities down the flanks that they were getting, it was just that they were finding it so easy because we were just so poor.
I think, yeah, we were absolutely poor, but in fairness to Celtic, they just charged at us at every single opportunity. They were pressing us. They know how to play against us because they've done it for the last 2 or 3 years. Just absolutely went for us, chased every single ball, ran themselves into the ground. maybe it cost them in that second half, but I think we certainly improved in the second half. But it's just so simple to how to beat us these days, because we just cannot handle it. Anyway, into the second half, there was changes at half-time. Wright came off and Seema came on. I don't think that was the main issue, but Seema came on and it certainly done the trick, didn't it?
It did. I thought he was excellent for when he came on. He looked as if he was wanting the ball. He looked as if he was wanting to cause damage. He was very direct in his play and he just looked dangerous, Derek. And I think that happened kind of instantly in the second half. And I think that's possibly what gave the team, you know, the spark that they were needing, because they saw that there was somebody that they could give the ball to that was going to cause some damage. So, it was an excellent substitution at that point.
Yeah. Second half overall, I think we were miles better. And as I said before, I think Celtic did start sitting off us, but I think that was in large part to the fact that we were doing a wee bit more of what they were doing to us in the first half. We were all over them at points as well. But it still leads to the same issues where we weren't putting Hart under any pressure whatsoever. Granted, we got the goals, the three goals in the second half, but we were very rarely putting Hart under pressure, for considering we had so much possession and so many half chances. But anyway, on the 51st minute, Silva goes down in the box. He was given a yellow card instantly. He had been play acting all game. There was one point, Dave, where he was kind of pushed. And yeah, it was a foul, but he was rolling about like he got hit in the face and it was on the top of his chest. Dave, he was embarrassing this game, wasn't he?
He was. I think since the Benfica game in Portugal, Derek, he's been very poor. He's been very ineffective. There's no much going his way at all. And I don't know what's been going through his head to be acting like that and trying stuff. But it certainly wasn't working. And he was looking like a bit of an idiot, to be honest with you.
Yeah. However, that does not mean that this wasn't a foul, because it was a clear foul. It went to a VAR check. The referee goes to screen. The yellow card was rescinded and the penalty given. You know, there was contact, Dave. Did he go down a wee bit easy? He possibly did, yes. But there was definite contact. And it's not the first time Johnson's done that and got away with it. So, you know, quite rightly so, a penalty was given in this case.
What gets me, Derek, is everybody says he went down very easily. When the challenge was made, he was going forward, right? Now, if that challenge had have been down, you know, if his leg had have been down, let's say, near his ankle, Silva would have got over that because the ball was there to be struck. So I don't care what anybody said. It was a high foot. It was stopping him from getting to the ball. It was in the box. It's as clear a penalty as you can get. The problem that he had was he didn't make it look great on himself because of the theatrics that he'd been doing before it had happened. But that was a clear-cut penalty, 100%.
What I found funny as well is Celtic fans clearly not knowing the rules, because they say, oh, Johnson got the ball first. No, he never actually got the ball. Yes, there was a touch off his foot, but it was actually played off him, completely uncontrolled as well. So he never actually got the ball. But anyway, up steps Tavernier on the 55th minute and he made it 2-1 high into the left side. So he gave us a wee bit of a lifeline there. And Dave, from what we thought was a lifeline, we thought we had brought ourselves right back into the game, because in the 57th minute, Dessers makes it 2-2, or so we thought. It was a quick break with Silva. He slides it to Seema. It was two attempts to cross it. He gets the ball to Dessers, who also has two attempts, and he puts the second one into the back of the net. Off celebrating, absolute bedlam in the stands, there was a VAR check. The referee goes to the screen, and he rules the goal out. He initially points to the centre circle, mind you, at first, thinking everybody thought that the goal had stood, but no, he had corrected himself. He chops it off and he points to the place where the foul was. So this all relates back to a challenge that Lawrence done about 70 yards and 30 seconds beforehand, before the ball went into the back of the net. Dave, was it a foul? Yes, it was. It was probably as much contact as there was with the Silva penalty. However, the problem is, and I think other pundits have alluded to it as well, why did it go back so far? Yes. Surely there has to be another phase of play. And now they're saying, apparently, well, because Celtic, even though a couple of players touched the ball, they never had control of the ball. So it was all still in the same phase of attacking. But it leads to the question, which is still unknown at this point, is how far does VAR go back to check if it's a foul or not? Especially when the referee was right in front of it and he's seen it.
when have you seen that happen in another game? That's what I was trying to think. When have we seen goals being chopped off for a passage of play, which had happened exactly like you said, 30 seconds before, away down in the middle of the park? When has that happened? I honestly cannot remember anything like that happening. Maybe I'm wrong and people listening will be able to give me a list, but I genuinely can't think about things like that, how that happened. And it's bringing flashbacks to the handball, the game at Parkhead, when they were just desperate to try and find ways to chop it off by going back and making a complete arse again. I didn't see anything wrong with it at all, Derek. I had seen that the play had raged on. Why the referee didn't blow at the time when he saw the foul, I honestly don't know. And as you quite rightly said, he was looking right at it. So again, I think that goal should have stood and it didn't.
But anyway, it was chopped off. We'll take that one on the chin because, again, it's a grey area with VAR about how far they go back. 69th minute, Silva and Lawrence off, Matondo and Cantwell on. 77th minute, Diomande off and Dowell on. 86th minute, we finally drew level with Seymour scoring. Sterling was wide left. He crosses it into the box, headed away by Callum McGregor, but only to Seymour. The ball bounces kindly for Seymour and he has a shot which deflects off McGregor and into the back of the net. Bedlam in the stands again.
Yep, fantastic. And I was terrified at one stage because I thought they'll find a way to chop this goal off as well, because I was absolutely raging about the Desert goal at the time. I thought they'll find a way, but I seen when it was, you know, definitely given 2-2, we'd scored, I genuinely thought we were going to go on and get the winner at that stage. The team were right up for it. They'd fought back for 2-0 down, which was fantastic. Great fight back. Everybody was focused on them trying to get the winner. But as you're about to get into, absolute disgraceful defending again.
Yes. Less than a minute later, on the 87th minute, Celtic made it 3-2. It was down the left, crosses into the middle to Ida. Sterling and Souter can't tackle or don't want to tackle. A quick shot into the net. Butland beat it, he's near post. As I said in the post-match, I'm maybe being a bit harsh, but surely Butland can't be getting beat at his near post like that. Yeah. He might have been unsighted by the absolutely useless defenders in that point there. But, Dave, from where we thought we had brought ourselves back into it, we knew there was probably going to be a decent bit of injury time because of VAR and stoppages. We thought we had chucked it away, didn't we?
Definitely, 100%. And I don't think that Butland can get away scot-free there, Derek, because we know how much a top-class goalkeeper he is, and you're expecting him to save a shot like that, even if he is unsighted like that. It was poor defending. All we had to do at that stage was just try and get the ball back and build on it for there, but they made an absolute backside of it and put Celtic back in the driving seat, and it was a bitter blow at that stage. It really was.
Yes. However, 8 minutes of injury time were given duly so, because, as I said, all the VAR checks. And then on the 93rd minute, wow, that's all I could say. Matondo with an absolute peach. Very reminiscent of the goal he scored against Hibs in the last game.
Yep.
The ball was played about the Celtic box. Lots of possession from us. We were looking for space. It went out to Matondo on the left side. He cuts inside and unleashes an absolute cracking curling shot into the top right-hand corner. Just, Dave, the Rangers put out a video after it and it just showed how much curl and how well placed that ball was. A stunner goal, wasn't it?
Fantastic strike, and showing that his, you know, goal against Hibs wasn't, you know, a one-off. It was almost a carbon copy, but better considering where he picked the ball up. The fact they had two men in front of him to keep going like that, you know, it was an excellent goal, and, you know, the place went absolute bedlam. And the way the game had went for us to get back to 2-2, then, you know, it felt like we'd actually scored the winner. I know we hadn't, but it was a great fight back and a fantastic goal.
Yes. 96th minute, Goldson off and Balogun on. A bit of a weird substitution that, you know, Kim, I don't know if he was injured or no, but, you know, he came off and that's how the game ended up. So, you know, an absolute mental game, had everything. It was a great advert for Scottish football. Probably a fair result in the end. You know, it was one of the cliches, game of two halves.
Yeah.
I'm just so angry at the way we lost our goals and the lack of fight in the first half, because we've shown that fight in the second half Where was it the first half?
Yeah.
There was obviously fallout from that, Dave. You know, of course, Celtic fans couldn't take the result and move on. They were claiming they were cheated out of a win because it was never a penalty. That's despite every single pundit in the land saying it was a clear penalty. Just get over it. Dave, we've got to cover another thing here. Obviously, you know, when the Dessers goal was ruled out, the police came over to the dugouts because apparently a coin had been thrown at the Celtic dugout. And then subsequently, video has been shown that during one of the passages of play, there was a bottle thrown onto the park again and it just missed a Celtic player. Dave, I don't care what team you are, it's a fucking disgrace. If you can't act like an adult when you go to the football and not do things like that, just don't show up at the football. I'm sick of seeing this, Dave. We're finally starting to get both sets of Old Firm fans back in the stadium from next year, which we'll get into. We can't be doing this kind of nonsense, Dave. It's happened again. I'm disgusted at the fans that done it. I really am, Dave. And if anybody that's listening that think that's acceptable, please don't listen anymore because I'm not having it anymore.
I wouldn't like to think there is anybody apart from the idiot that threw it that would think it was acceptable, Derek. We can't be on our high horse talking about Hibs supporters doing that, throwing things on when we've got absolute morons in our support that are doing exactly the same thing. I don't know if there's been any update for it, Derek, but I would like to think that the person has been identified and they're banned for life from Ibrox for doing that, because exactly like you said, absolutely no time for anything like that happening. So disgraceful.
Yes. So, Dave, what we were meant to have on Wednesday the 10th of April, we were meant to be playing the rescheduled game against Dundee.
Yeah.
Obviously, they played the game at the weekend, which was the Motherwell game. The game should never have went ahead because the pitch was still in an atrocious state. They got covers in. They drafted Celtic to help them to bring in covers and cover the pitch. There was a pitch inspection in the morning of the game, which, you know, the pitch passed with flying colours. However, there was more rain scheduled for that day. And lo and behold, the game was called off. So Rangers released a statement that night slamming Dundee for their negligence and unprofessionalism, as well as having a go at the SPFL for not handling it correctly and basically ignoring the solutions we put forward. Dave, it was an absolute ludicrous situation. Yep. Where it was already agreed that if it got postponed again on the 10th, the game would be played on the 17th of April at Dens Park, where there would be an inspection again the day before. And if the pitch was okay and the weather forecast was fine for that next day, it would be played on. And if not, an agreement had been made to move it to St Johnson's ground in Perth. I mean, the SPFL refused to release post-split fixtures as well until this game was played, but eventually released them on the Tuesday after the game was given the go-ahead. It turns out that Sky are billing the SPFL for what was originally meant to be a six-figure sum for their costs and the two call-offs. I mean, it makes sense. They had a lot of transport, staffing costs, hotel costs, etc. For me, the whole sum should be sent to Dundee. Ultimately, it's the SPFL funds, which are the club's funds, and why should any other club be forced to pay for Dundee's issues when it could be argued that they've spent money on players rather than pitch maintenance, and they've gained a sporting advantage from that. Obviously, we'll get into the game did go ahead, so it wasn't needed. There has been an investigation into it, and Dundee have been fined effectively £66,000, with another £120,000 suspended if it happens again in the next season. So Dundee are no happy at this. They said that we find that their figures are inaccurate and their facts are inaccurate, and they're going to be appealing the decision. What's the appeal, Dave? They've clearly not maintained their pitch and their drainage system properly. They've caused two of our games to be postponed. They've caused another three this season. There was other games before that last season. Dave, it's inexcusable. We went into it before, so I'm really not going to get into too much more.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think you've got to feel for certain other clubs who have shelled out a hell of a lot of money on their pitches rather than their playing squads to make sure that things like this don't happen. And as you quite rightly said there, they have decided to go and, you know, strengthen their squad rather than deal with the, you know, the infrastructure at the club. And it's now cost them.
Well, we'll see what transpires with that. But anyway, that game wasn't played on the 10th. They now had the next game Sunday the 14th of April. It was a 3-2 loss away against Ross County in the Premiership. Dave, an absolute disgrace.
It was a disgrace. From start to finish, absolute disgrace. I couldn't actually believe what I was watching after the first half in the Celtic game, and then them able to pick themselves up with a bit of fight. I was expecting, you know, a backlash and a statement, and we never got it in any sense at all.
We lined up with four changes from the Celtic game: Butland, Tavernier, Goldson, Suter, Barisic, Lundstrom, Dowell, Cantwell, Silva, Sima and Dessers. On the subs bench were McCrory, Lawrence, Matondo, Sterling, Roof, Balogun, King, Raskin and McCausland. Now, we had just lost a goal within the first minute against Celtic. We nearly done it again, Dave, on the first minute. Very slow start again. Ross County get the ball on the right, across into the back post, found their player, but enough pressure was put on by our defenders to put him off, and he kicked it over the bar. Dave, that should have been 1-0 straight away because of a lackadaisical start again.
And it was, an absolute shocking finish by the Ross County player. Let's be honest, he really should have connected with that better, and we should have been 1-0 down, but just caught sleeping instantly yet again.
They had another chance in the 10th minute where they shot it over the bar, could have easily been in. It was basically all started from driving the ball 30 yards through our midfield. Just so many gaps there. But weirdly, on the 15th minute, we went 1-0 up with an OG. Really out of nothing. The corner came in from Tavernier from the right. It was flicked onto the near post by Silva. Suter and the defender went for the same ball, and the defender ends up kicking it into the back of his own net. Nobody at all knew what happened. No. Everybody stopped. The keeper appeared to parry it back out of his net just after it went on over the line. Everybody was expecting it to be ruled out or flagged. Nobody in the stadium knew what was happening. None of the commentators knew what was happening. And eventually the goal stood. I think it was a quick VAR check just to make sure it did go over the line. And it was clearly well over the line before the keeper got to there. So a bizarre goal to score. And it was an OG of everything as well. But Dave, I'll take it.
Oh, definitely. But, you know, nobody in the stadium knew what was going on, Derek. That was the bizarre thing about it. But, you know, when we saw in the replay, clearly over the line, the defender got a toe to it, put it past his keeper, and as you quite rightly said, without us actually doing anything in the game, we were 1-0 up. And I thought, again at that point, I thought, right, we've been given a gift here, let's go out, get this second goal before half-time, and, you know, make it easy for the second half. That's what I thought at that stage.
Yeah. Well, 23rd minute was good link-up play in our box by Ross County, ending in a shot and a big save from Butland putting it out for the corner. The ball was sneaking into the back of the net if it wasn't for Butland there. 25th minute, Seymour with an unorthodox header towards goal while he was facing away from the goal, and it was a great save by the keeper to put it out for the corner. Really, the rest of the half, it was just poor. We were allowing Ross County so much time and space in the middle. We were very hesitant to make tackles. The marking was non-existent, and again, very hesitant to take a shot as well. Into the second half, I missed the first couple of minutes of the second half, but in the 48th minute, Ross County drew level. A long ball over the top, down the right-hand side, a cutback cross on the deck for the attacker to have a shot. It was a great shot, great save by the legs of Butland, rebounds back out to the same player. Every one of our defenders goes to the right-hand side to follow the man. It opened up a gap, and he shoots it into that gap, into the opposite side. Dave, an abysmal goal to lose.
Yep, it was Keystone Cops defending Derek again. Two players were there to try and block, try to get the ball away. We made it so easy for them. That's them scored very early in the second half. That was them then up for the game completely, and we just looked a shambles again in defence.
Yes. Well, certainly they taken heed from that, and on the 50th minute, we went 2-1 down. It was a long ball from the Ross County half down the left side. Tavernier, absolutely nowhere. The attacker shoots the ball from the left side. Another great save from Butland, but he spills it right into the path of the attacker, who was completely unmarked, and he tapped into the back of the net. Dave, 2 minutes and an absolute shambles. I mean, yep. I don't know what to say about that.
I could see it coming. I really could. Ross County were well up for it. We looked completely lost at that stage, and I could just sense that we were going to get a goal conceded, and that's exactly what happened. Really poor again. No leaders in defence at all. You know, nobody that can just get in there and get the ball away. It was a good save by Butland, but he'll be annoyed with himself, though, that he didn't manage to get more on that to get it away. And, you know, another easy, you know, slot in for the attacker, who basically just followed up a shot, Derek. That's all. And our strikers, our forwards just don't seem to be doing that at all. They just followed up a shot. In case the goalkeeper makes a mistake, there's a player there just to fire it in. And I can't remember the last time that any of our strikers have done that.
No, definitely not. Anyway, we made substitutions on the 54th minute. Silva and Barisic off, Matondo and Sterling on. 62nd minute, Dowell off and Lawrence on. 68th minute, we had the ball in the back of the net after a weirdly a decent corner from Tavernier right to the back post. It was knocked on by Goldson's head towards the back of the post. And Seymour tries a hand of God and he put it into the back of the net, but it was clearly picked up by the referee and VAR. 69th minute. If the first two goals we conceded were bad enough, this one was just unbelievable. Ross County made it 3-1. From the non-goal, Ross County went right up the park, flicked the ball down the left, cuts inside, fends off the challenge from Lawrence in the box. Nobody putting in challenges in. One pass, Seymour slides out to try and get it, but the ball had already been shot into the back of the net at that point. Dave, I don't know where to go with that one either. It's just, well, what can you say?
You've just said the two players that were trying to make tackles were Lawrence and Seymour rather than our defenders that we're dealing with. That's, you know, all you've got to say there. Completely at sea, totally lost, shambolic, and very, very easy for Ross County. That's all it was.
73rd minute, Dessers off, Roof on. 75th minute, Cantwell had a shot off the bar. 85th minute, there was a VAR check for a handball as the ball was floated into the Ross County box. Comes off the outstretched hand of the Ross County defender. It goes to the screen, penalty given. Again, like the Goldson one in the Old Firm game, maybe a bit harsh, probably not what should be happening, but these are the rules these days. So it was a penalty. Tavernier makes it 3-2 and he hits it to the right side. The keeper dives the right way, but it was too powerful. We tried to score again, but we'd really done nothing in the rest of the game for the last few minutes. So, Dave, what is telling here is the fact that we're fighting for the title. Ross County are fighting to keep themselves out the relegation zone. There was only one team that were fighting in that game, and it certainly wasn't us.
Yep. And it was simple stuff. Simple defending, needing to be harder in midfield to win the ball, which we couldn't do, and just being completely void of any imagination up front. That was, you know, that was it. It's as simple as that. It was a collective. I don't even think, again, that Jack Butland can be faultless here as well. It was a whole team collapse, and I couldn't quite believe what I was seeing, to be honest with you.
Just, I'm lost for words with the way we played in that game. And the next game we've got to go into was Wednesday the 17th of April. It was away against Dundee in the Premiership. This was obviously the third rescheduled game for this one here. We were expecting a reaction from this one here. And Dave, it was nil each. That's about as much as I can say, because it was utter dog meat.
It is, and I've got very little down. I'd done the post-match last night, and it was a very quick one, basically, because there was very little happened in the game. He did make a few changes to the team. Starting lineup was Butland, Tavernier, Goldson, Suter, Sterling, Lundstrom, Lawrence, Cantwell, Silva, Sima, and Roof getting a start, with McCrory, Dessers, Matondo, Dowell, Davies, Barisic, King, Raskin and McCausland on the bench. Now, as you spoke about a wee while ago, the game finally going ahead after the third time of asking. But straight away, like the last two games, it was almost 1-0 to Dundee, because the Dundee player had got the ball just about at the corner, just inside from the corner, fired it into the box. It was headed away by Sterling, only to the Dundee player on the edge of the box, who takes a shot, and I genuinely thought it was in. Derek, I don't know about you, but it must have been millimetres past the post. A great strike, and we could easily have been 1-0 down at that point as well, because we didn't start well at all, did we? We were caught sleeping, and Dundee were putting us under pressure instantly.
Yeah, just abysmal once again from the team.
Yep. Not much happening after that. A chance on the 10th minute. Cantwell intercepts the ball. He passes the ball through to Seymour, who had the goal in front of him. He strode through into the box. He was getting pressured all the way, but done well. Managed to get a good shot at goal. Good save by the goalkeeper and cleared. That really, when it comes to sort of half-decent chances, was it for the first half. There was a couple of half-chances, Roof linking up with Lundstrom into Simmer. He shoots, but it's, you know, straight at the goalkeeper. I let off because Dundee took a free kick for the edge of the box. Butland pulls off two fantastic saves, and the ball is bundled into the net by the Dundee player, but the offside flag was up straight away. They didn't really show much in the way of a replay after that, but we got off with that one as well, Derek, didn't we?
Yeah, it was just, once again, shock. I can't really say much more about this, Dave.
No. And then the only other half chance in the first half was 4 minutes into injury time, where Lawrence picks up a loose ball inside. He runs it into the box, runs at the defence, but slices his ball, the ball well past the post.
And yeah, they've been just as well fucking slicing his balls.
it was really stuffy. We weren't providing any real class at all. The midfield completely anonymous. So were the front three. The only person that looked as if he could possibly do anything in the game was Seema. But you could tell he was running out of steam. And, as I say, half-time, 0-0. So in the second half, nothing happening in the first 10 minutes. Philip Clement decides to change it. Triple substitution. Dessers, Matondo and Dowell on. Roof, Silva and Cantwell off. Cantwell, apart for that one through ball through, as they seem to have done nothing, really anonymous. Silva, I can't remember him touching the ball in the first half. So really, really poor. With a wee half chance in the 60th minute, there's a corner, finds its way to the back post. There's Lawrence. He gets his shot away, but it's saved by the goalkeeper. But then really, really scrappy up until the 72nd minute, where the only other chance that we had in the game, and it was Dessers. The ball's played up to him. He's got the goal in front of him. He gets to the edge of the box, hits a very good curling shot, but too close to the goalkeeper. He makes a, you know, quite a good save, but you would expect him to save it, and it was away. And then in the 77th minute, Suter with a last gasp block right in front of goal, because that was going to deny a certain goal for Dundee to keep it at 0-0. But that is how the game played out, Derek. That is how few chances we created in the game. And it was just really, really dull, uninspiring, stuffy, everything that you can see, lethargic, scrappy. There was no fight at all from Rangers. And it was just poor. It was just really, really poor. We were expecting a performance after that terrible result against Ross County and got absolutely nothing.
I mean, Dave, I put a tweet out after the Ross County game saying that ultimately, it changes nothing. We still need to go and win every single game, which we're looking for. All it meant was the fact that we cannot rely on a draw against Celtic. We need to beat them. Yeah. Simple as. So the job was still the same. And I said, we could do that, right? But I do not have any faith in the players to go out and win the other games outside of the Celtic game. And quite a few people agreed. There was a few people as well that says, oh, fucking support the team, man, or words to that effect, Dave. And I think in the first game, I've been proven right, because I have no faith in this team anymore. When there was no expectation on them, when Clement first came in, they started to play some fantastic football. They really did. All the pressure was off. They put on a good run. But when the chips were down, you seen it against Benfica, they shat the bed. Well, they seen it against Celtic, they shat the bed. You seen it against Ross County, they shat the bed. Every single time this season, they've shat the bed. This is not a new thing with the same players, Dave. This is what I've been saying for the last two or three seasons with some of these players. Some of them are a wee bit older. Some of them are quite clearly, you see, the legs have gone. Tavernier is a case in point. We've overutilised them over the years, and I think people are still looking at what he has done for us rather than what he is doing for us just now. Yes, you can laud his achievements, his goals, his, you know, his service over the years, absolutely. But what is he doing for us just now? He's a hindrance. Same with Goldson, same with Lundstrom. Same with a few other players in that team as well. They are now past their sell-by date. I do not want to see the same back four at all in our squad next season. And I know I'm asking a big thing here, because we have got a hell of a job in the summer to red out a lot of these players. We're going to be a lot big turnover. The board need to simply find money. But Dave, I am sick to the back teeth of these same players playing the same way, letting us down time and time again when it comes to squeaky bum time. I don't care what they've done before. I don't care how many goals they've scored. I don't care what achievements they've done. They've let us down time and time again. There's good points to them, and I think that's the reason why under four or some of the more managers have kept them in place. However, they've also got the same amount of managers the sack for basically their arses collapsing every single time. I'm sick of it, Dave. I'm fed up with the happy clappers in our support thinking that we can just get away with having Tavernier, Goldson, they're the rocks of the team. No, they have let us down time and time again. Lundstrom as well, he had proven, I've felt for a good while, he's probably one of the only ones that he should be getting a new contract in the summer when his contract's up. But no, over the last four or five games, he's proven why he shouldn't be getting a contract, because his arse has collapsed with him again. Dave, it's not good enough in the slightest.
It's not, and all your points are totally valid there. You know, especially talking about the old guard that have been there, and it's quite clear that it hasn't been working for the past few seasons, but they're still there. Tavernier's been a great servant. He's set the record for goals and all that. But what I try to look at is, would a defensive right back do more for the team by us not conceding goals than what Tavernier has done by scoring goals? I'm now thinking that that would be more of a benefit to us than our marauding right back going up to try and score goals and leaving huge gaps at the back for people to easily, you know, exploit and score, rather than having a defensive right back in there that's not going to let anybody pass them and is going to solely concentrate on defending. Because if you've got a solid defence that's not going to let in any goals, the rest, your midfield know that they can concentrate going forward, as can the strikers. But I'm that way now that it's just been proven time and time again that, you know, the old guard there. And we've not seen Barisic, and it's been, I think it's quite clear to the manager that Barisic, you know, with him being fit, he's still not going to play him. He would rather play a reserve right back at left back than play Barisic because of how poor he's been. And Tavernier's getting that way as well, or is defensively. When it comes to Goldson, he's your typical big centre half, but he's just, I think everybody now knows how to play against him and how to exploit his weaknesses. And that is a huge hindrance to us as well now, Derek. I am still of the opinion, though, that our midfield and attack aren't doing enough as well to keep the pressure off the defence. They're not creating enough chances. They're not doing enough going forward. I think it's went very, very stale. So it's the whole team. And I find it really hard to believe that this is happening, considering how much the manager had got the team for the doldrums and raised them and got the best out of all these players, to suddenly it going back to being how bad it was under Michael Beale at the end of his tenure. So it's a complete disaster the way that it's happened. And I really, really hope that the manager is who I think he is and can get some sort of spark coming in, starting with the next game. But it's going to be very, very, very difficult. And there's just far too many players. And I'm not just talking about the old guard here either, the new players that have been brought in that are doing absolutely nothing for us also. And it's just culminating in this disaster that we're seeing in front of us just now.
I mean, you look at the last two games, especially Dundee and Ross County, you look at how we played, big massive gaps in the middle, so timid to pass a ball, so timid to tackle.
Misplaced passes as well is unbelievable. We have passed the ball more to the opposition in the last two games than I can remember. The passing is absolutely deplorable in midfield, going up front as well. Absolutely shocking.
And that would be almost acceptable if they were trying the unusual pass or they were trying something exceptional, yeah, the thing that nobody would expect, and it's just not coming off. But they're not doing that. They're just trying to pass into space and they're passing to nobody. And the main point I was making, Dave, was the fact that within two or three games of Clement coming in, you've seen a marked improvement and a marked, yeah, change in the way players were playing. They were trying different things. They were trying the unusual pass. When they were losing it, if it wasn't coming off, they were chasing the ball straight away, getting it back very quickly. And that's what made us get the big run of games together, and we were successful with that. The last two games especially, we've stopped doing everything that yeah. he's taught them. And I don't know what that is. I think there's a scaredness in the team. We've seen that before. It's almost like they're scared to make the unusual pass, to try something, because they'll lose possession and then they might concede a goal because there's so much riding on it. We're in the squeaky bum time now. So that's against everything that Clement has taught them. So this then comes back to a mentality issue. This then comes back, if it's a mentality issue, it's the leadership group. Then that comes back to the leadership group that have been the same for the past 6-7 years almost. So then it comes back to the old guard. This is why it doesn't just need... See if we are having to keep the likes of Tavernier and Goldson because we get no bids in the summer for them and they are still contracted, I think, to 2026 or something like that in the next 2 years. Then I would like to see a complete new leadership group in there. I don't want to see them in the team, to be honest. I think we should try and get rid of them. But if they have to keep them, there needs to be a new, younger leadership group coming in there. New captain, new vice captain, new ideas. Let take some of the burden off Tavernier and Goldson, for that matter. Let them just do the basics of their job. You look at Tavernier in terms of, and I've been saying this for the past 2 months, I know I'm picking on Tavernier, but a lot of this mentality comes from him. Yes, see, when he's on form, he is absolutely undroppable. He's unplayable. The opposition just cannot play against him. He's brilliant. But for the past 18 months, he's very, very rarely been like that. He cannot beat his first man more often than not. He's taken every single free kick, every single set piece, corner, you name it, what we're getting. He's taking the ball off people to do that. Just let him do the basics of his job rather than do all of that there. Now, you've got a player in Dessers who he needs chances because he's maybe going to hit the target maybe one in every five times. And even then, he's not great. So he's going to need more chances. Tavernier is putting in one decent cross in every 10 just now. So if you've got another player there who's maybe doing one in five decent crosses rather than one in 10, that means Dessers is going to get more chances, which means he's going to get more goals. I'm maybe oversimplifying that there, Dave, from my, you know, vast experience in Football Manager. But that's the kind of things you need to look at. Because Tavernier hasn't hit a barn door with any crossing this year. It's been so woeful every single time. Goldson, when was the last time he put a header on target? Never mind put a header in the back of the net. When's the last time Lundstrom was playing these great passing, you know, charging through midfield, taking control of that midfield? I know we're limited because of injuries, but that is no excuse for coming up against bottom of the table opposition and playing shite like this, Dave.
You're right. We have also, and again, I am not excusing players because everything you've said there is correct. We have went, though, from when Ridvan was playing and playing well and having guys in front of him like Cortez, who came on a great game. We have went from a left-hand side that's been very strong to a left-hand side that's now non-existent for us because Silva's done nothing for me. So the emphasis is now going back to the right-hand side, and possibly Tavernier is thinking, well, there's nothing coming to the left-hand side. I need to try and do something. But he's not got it anymore to be able to do that. Quite rightly, what you've said, his crossing's been absolutely deplorable this season. It's almost every single time it doesn't get past the first man. That was a big problem last night. The amount of times I sat and watched them trying to put crosses into the box and it didn't beat the first man was incredible. You know, we're not taking anything away from his free kick taking, you know, his record stands for itself. But, you know, also everybody looks and says, how many corners do we get in a match? I think we had 9 last night at least, and I think we maybe had one player connected with a corner all night to have a chance, and that was cleared by the defender as well. It's not good enough to be able to do. We should be dominating when it comes to corners because we're winning that many and we're just not, and it is a big factor. The fact, Derek, that Tavernier takes all of the corners, he does it against every single team, so every team knows exactly how to defend him and what to do against him. And it is just getting for the fact that he is getting older, he is getting slower, and it's just a repetitive thing, isn't it? If you do something enough against certain players, they'll know exactly how to deal with you, and that's exactly what's happening with Rangers just now.
Yeah. So, I'm not going to go through the full table because we've played 33, we're on 75 points, we're three behind Celtic, and they have got a five better goal difference than us just now. So, ultimately, what it means is that it's still in our hands, absolutely. We need to go out and win every single game. Obviously, the goal difference would come into it then. We need to win every single game by a big margin. Dave, I have no faith in the players. You know, as simple as I said that before, after the Ross County game, I was proven right at the first attempt. So
anything can happen, Derek, but it's highly unlikely that it's going to happen. There could be a chance that Celtic could drop points apart from playing us, but it does mean that we've got to win every single match. And the way that we've been playing in the last two games, it's highly, highly unlikely. It's not to say that I'm not hoping and praying that that is the case, but going by what we've seen, it's no happening, is it?
So the post-split fixtures were announced. Sunday the 28th of April away against St Mirren, a 12:30 kickoff. Sunday the 5th of May at home against Kilmarnock. That's a 1 o'clock kickoff, I believe. Saturday the 11th of May, that's away against Celtic. That's a 12:30 kickoff. I'm going to be down in Liverpool for that game, so I don't know if I will get to see it or not. Tuesday the 14th of May at home against Dundee at 19:30 kickoff. Saturday the 18th of May, that's away against Hearts. That's a 12:30 kickoff. So the obvious thing I see in that fixture list there is that the two worst pitches in Kilmarnock and Dundee are no longer a factor because we're playing them at home.
Yeah, no, that's true. And tricky fixtures for us away as well. I mean, they are all going to be, but all we can do now, Derek, is try and put some faith in the manager. A lot of people, I have seen a ridiculous stat out there with people trying to compare him to Michael Beale and his first, the same amount of games in charge. And I absolutely sticks in the back of my throat the way that people have been coming away with stuff like that, because I genuinely think he's a very good manager. I do think that he's the man to take us forward. He just doesn't have the players with the belief. And we really, it's now down to him to try and get some sort of spark from them. And, you know, starting from a big game on Sunday, which I'm sure you're about to get into, which we really need to win, you know, that game also. So,
yeah, so obviously before the league fixtures start back, Sunday the 21st of April, it's at Hampden against Hearts in the Scottish Cup semi-final. That's a 3 o'clock kickoff. So obviously being the Sunday, Celtic have played the day before. We'll see what state the pitch is in.
Yeah.
But anyway, after other clubs bleating and moaning about not getting a 50-50 split of fans at Hampden when they play the Old Firm, Aberdeen were given less against Celtic for the Saturday game, but Hearts were actually given a 50-50 split. To me, Dave, it's only fair that they do, because they've got a relatively big fan base. They do sell out their home fixtures quite a bit as well. However, it turns out they haven't been able to shift that full amount. They've got around 5,000 left, and Hearts have put out a pleading case to say to their fans, look, we're going to have to pony up the cash if we cannot sell them. You know, I think we've already been given a portion of them for our fans to sell as well. I mean, surely though, this puts to bed any notion that other clubs should be given a 50-50 split. I get the arguments about it should be a neutral venue and they should be given the opportunity, etc. But if the club with the next biggest fan base compared with the Old Firm and a consistent fan base at that can't sell them, even at being allowed to sell four tickets per person as well, then no club will be able to do that. So I hope the next time any other fan base greet and moan about not getting a 50-50 split, they just go back to this scenario just here, Dave.
We'll wait and see. I don't see it happening. I think it'll still be a complaint. They'll still say that it would be an advantage to have more fans in there, the other team. I can't see it happening. That they'll still keep complaining about it and we'll still end up with this ridiculous scenario in the future. I can't see that happening, Derek.
Yeah, we'll see. But anyway, we'll now go into the news. ¶¶ So, Dave, the first thing I've got to cover here is I put a tweet out praising Clement. This was, I think, just before the Celtic game as well, about his no-nonsense pressers. And Dave, he's since had three horrendous pressers where he's just said weird, weird things to completely prove me wrong, especially the one last night with the Dundee game. In the tweet, I also mentioned that the best thing about it is he actually completely triggers the Celtic fans, to which they bombarded the tweet with comments exactly proving my point. I mean, not the brightest, Dave, are they?
I know, but I try not to get involved with them, and I used to pride myself on the fact, but it's very difficult not to get involved with them because they are very easily led on.
Triggered.
Yes, definitely. But no, it was quite incredible, the amount of retweets and the amount of quotes that you had on it and stuff like that. But unfortunately, as you say, he's came out with a few pressers, apart from the one last night where I genuinely think that he knew what he was doing last night, and with the games coming up, he knows he really can't change the team about majorly. I don't think he was wanting to hang his players out to dry, considering that there was a really big game on Sunday coming up. So I'm going to let him away with that one that he done last night. But certainly the two before that, a wee bit puzzling the way that he was wording things, but I will let him away with the one last night.
Aye, the one last night, as I said, I put a tweet out as well about that, about the fact that pressers, there's a wee bit of PR nonsense that goes on, and as you said, Dave, not wanting to throw his players under the bus, but you know, if he is really believing that, and I hope to God he's not, then he's really just thrown himself under the bus with that one here, but we'll wait and see. Anyway, Rangers and Celtic, as I mentioned, have got together and agreed at fan allocations for next year. Approximately 5% of each ground, so between 2,500 and 3,000 fans in each ground. Some of our fans ultimately who have season tickets in the Broomlon will be moved for these games. It may be taken into account with renewals. People might not renew after that, I don't know. It's likely what will happen, though, is it means there'll be little to no general sale for the Old Firm games. So it's also been confirmed, though, that Rangers categorically won't be going back to the old allocation of 8,000. So that's pretty good from the club, that one there. Have to laugh at Celtic fans as they claimed it should be 8K or zero, and now they're claiming some sort of victory over this. I don't know. But as I said, sensible option from both clubs in the end. It's just funny that Celtic seem to have now gotten over their safety concerns and have agreed that, because even they said it's 8K or nothing. So
yeah, exactly.
Next thing, talking about season tickets, the renewals are underway. I think we've already had about 35,000 renewals for what's been disclosed so far. There's generally about a 5% increase across the board per ticket. I mean, increases are never good, but I think they were frozen last year, if my memory serves me right. So it's the kind of thing that the board have made this decision, fine, but they really need to be seen to be backing the manager in the next couple of windows now, so there'll be no excuses.
No, I mean, the fans have done their bit, Derek, so now it's up to them to do something as well. So I agree with you 100%.
Just on Tuesday there, the fans' CEO forum was held at Edmondson House, I believe. So various things were discussed on that one there. Four Lads Had a Dream put a wee blog out about all the various things that were discussed. So it's an interesting read there. Obviously talking about the Dundee situation and slamming them there. That's where they confirmed the 35,000 season ticket renewals so far. They're up update on the sports bar, it's still on course. They were trying to get it out for maybe the start of this year, but it's probably going to be the summer now. In the summer plans, Niels Coppin is working hard in the market right now. He's identified a few players. Looks as if there's going to be a few incomings and outgoings. Well, there needs to be, ultimately. He's apparently completely revamped the recruitment system and the way we've got it set up there. There's a financial update, the fact that they understand that we had a £10.5 million loss, and that was pre-player trading model as well. So he says that is something that needs to get rid of.
Yep.
You know, if you think if we can basically eliminate that loss before we get into player trading, we will have more money then to spend on player trading. And I know a lot of people were still grumbling about the cost of Edmondson House and all that nonsense, but if you understand that, it's maybe only going to make potentially £1 million a season, but it's £1 million that would be profit that can then service the debt, which means then we're not having to sell players to service debt. So it all adds up at the end of the day. There is a reason why they're doing it.
Yeah.
They've confirmed that obviously with the fixtures now out, they can start work on the Copeland stand earlier on with the new cantilevers that are going in. Various things like that. It's an interesting read, and certainly it's this fans forum seems to be proving it's worth. We're finding out stuff so far. So the next one I think is in three months' time. So it's good to see.
Yeah, definitely.
Next thing here, Rangers women's team lifted the Sky Sports Cup after a 4-1 win over Partick Thistle at Tynecastle. So great that for the women's team there. It wasn't without controversy though, as the Partick Thistle keeper had a bit of a howler for a couple of the goals that they conceded. Oh, right. And given his no fucks given to her, Joey Barton had some unsavoury comments about her that were homophobic and misogynistic. Quite likely, Rangers issued a statement, not naming him, but slamming the comments nonetheless. Yeah. So, an absolute fucking fud of a man. He's just, you know, attention-seeking little twat who shat it for Scott Brown. That's all you can say about him.
I thought when you were mentioning the game there, Derek, in the aftermath, you were going to be talking about the whole debacle with the Hearts badge in the dressing room.
Oh, ye have little faith, Dave, because that was the next thing I was going to cover.
That's what I was chuckling about, because that's what I thought that you were going to do. First of all, fantastic that the women's team have won, you know, the cup and silverware added to, you know, for them. Excellent achievement. But this just to me just proves again, Scottish football as a whole, regardless if it's men or women or whoever's playing it, is just an absolute joke. So it is.
Yes, I mean, from the serious controversy there of Joey Barton to the absolutely ridiculous, and what I'm calling, Crestgate.
Yeah.
I mean, images emerged after the game from the Rangers dressing room at Tynecastle. We were using the home dressing room. It appears, like us, Hearts have got a Hearts crest on the floor. Well, we had put our crest on top of it. Now, there was a backlash from the Hearts fans online, which is petty, but it's fine. They're fans, they're allowed to be upset over it. However, Hearts released a statement, and I'm going to read this, Dave, because it's just comedy gold.
Yeah.
Heart of Midlothian Football Club is aware of images circulating of the Tynecastle Park home dressing room at today's Sky Sports Cup final. Although the club hands over the running of the stadium on the day to the competition organisers, the SWPL, we were involved with pre-match planning. We would therefore like to assure our supporters that we did not approve any request for dressing room branding in either dressing room for either club involved. It's extremely disappointing to learn that our wishes were disregarded. How this came to be is a matter for the SWPL and Rangers to sort, but needless to say, no explanation will be satisfactory in our eyes or our fans' eyes. Nevertheless, we will demand answers to ensure that our club crest is never defaced again. It's also regrettable that this action has taken away the focus from what was a successful cup final and another opportunity to grow the women's football in Scotland. I mean, Dave, as laughable as it was, the best of it was, in the final in the same competition 2 years previously at the same ground, Rangers done the exact same thing. We posted a picture of it online and nobody said anything.
Yeah.
I mean, Hearts have got to understand that at the end of the day, when you hand over your stadium for a competition, you hand over the decorating rights again. Nothing's been damaged and it was all put back to normal. Yeah. If you're happy to accept the money for hosting, you can't complain when your stadium gets temporarily rebranded, like it does in every single cup final throughout Britain, probably throughout the world as well. It is absolutely tin pot nonsense. Yep. And once again, it's just big bad Rangers causing issues.
Yep. And I found it laughable, but the comedy didn't stop there, Derek, did it? Because I don't know if you're going to cover what happened when Hearts played their next home game against Kilmarnock.
Oh, yes, I forgot about this. Killy ended up getting a draw and they get out of the game as well. A decent draw from them, considering Hearts are above them. And they put a wee tweet out afterwards, and there were a picture of rolling up their carpet crest over the Hearts badge, and they had a wee quip as well with that one. Absolutely spot on from the Killy social media team.
Tremendous. Absolutely tremendous what they did there. Really showing Hearts childish behaviour for what it was. No, top notch for the social media team at Kilmarnock there.
Next thing here is Lewis McLeod is back at Ibrox in an academy coaching role. Yeah. He obviously had to retire aged 28 due to injury, so he just had a series of injuries that put him out of the game. So hopefully he kicks on there and
definitely, yeah.
Brings through the new academy.
Yep.
Next thing as well, talk of Butland being included in the England squad for a couple of friendlies. However, he was left out. It's going to be, if he can't make a couple of friendlies, it's doubtful he's going to be included in the Euro squad. I mean, on his form alone in Scotland and then add in the European form, he should have been at least on the bench for the friendlies, given the fact that England have got questionable keepers at this point. Yeah. Pickford's always going to be the number one for some weird reason, but their number two and three are not all that great, are they?
No, they're not, but I don't care about England internationally. And he's a guy who we can't afford anything to happen to him, and we know our luck with players going away, international football coming back with injuries and stuff like that. So I'm quite happy, you know, disappointed for him personally, but for us, I don't want to see any of our players away, you know, with a possibility of getting injured. And with our luck, that would be something that would probably happen if it was to you know, it happened for him. So I don't think it's going to happen.
Problem is, Dave, is it raises the stature of him. It would raise the value of him as well. We're going to, maybe at some point, he's one of the players who's going to have a high value attached to him. We might need to get into the thing that he's maybe not going to be here for the next couple of years. So
possibly, yeah.
Next thing here, Stuart Cosgrove was found to have breached BBC standards after comments made about Richard Gough and claiming that he wasn't sure Gough was against apartheid when he was living there. Another in the long list of anti-Rangers digs from BBC employees, something that they were meant to be stopping after the new agreement. But Dave, it continues on.
Yeah, especially him. He's got a track record of constantly putting the boot in, Derek, and I think he gets away with it because the show that he's supposed to do is supposed to be a sort of comedy version of Scottish football, you know, magazine sort of taking the mick and stuff like that, but it's constant from him, and you know, about time that something was said. So pleased that that's happened.
Yep. Now, in the new draconian hate crime laws that came into force in Scotland, Ali McCoist was on TalkSport ridiculing them, and in a very joking way, he was ridiculing them, and before the Old Firm game, he said that himself and 48,000 others will be breaching the law on Sunday at the Old Firm game. Of course, the fucking lunatics in the Celtic fan base and the Scottish nationalists went mental, all claiming that he was going to be singing sectarian songs. Of course, he said nothing of the sort, and he was jokingly making a point that the definition of a hate crime under this law was so subjective that people were going to criminalise people for nothing. And the reaction of people even proved his point. I mean, the lunacy has taken on a new level with that one there. And it's quite telling that the two groups of people that are offended over that are two cheeks of the same arse, weren't they?
Quite incredible as well when you are getting someone in our media, another BBC employer who I won't name, but we know that he's Irish, who basically put words in the mouth of Ali McCoist and, you know, said specifically what he was referring to, which was complete and utter nonsense. He never said anything of the sort. Absolutely ridiculous that that man's got a platform and he was able to say stuff like that. It was absolutely shocking. I'm surprised that Ali McCoist hasn't spoken out against this particular person as well, because it was an absolute joke what he said. McCoist was making a tongue-in-cheek comment about how ridiculous everything is at the moment, and the backlash has been incredible. But not surprising, Derek, by the reaction that it got there. It just shows what we are dealing with at the moment, doesn't it?
I mean, he had to, the next day, have a quick non-apology retraction as well on the radio. So it just goes to show. But, you know, the fact is that what was actually hilarious about it as well is when he said it, even Michael Stewart tried to get him to rein it in, because Michael Stewart was like, no, he never said that. That's not what he's saying at all. Now, talking of Michael Stewart, I'm not going to give him a lot of airtime, but his meltdowns over the last few games have been absolutely hilarious. The guy is a first-class plum. He really is. He's, you know, he's that thick. He keeps on putting posts out on Twitter, you know, trying to be controversial, trying to be the Chris Sutton. He's not even got a blue tick to make himself money out of it. That's how fucking thick he is, which means he actually believes what he's putting out. He's not just saying things to be controversial. Oh, Dave, the media in this country for sport is unreal.
It's quite funny, though, that we've not had any absolute meltdowns about decisions in the last two games that we've played, Derek.
Well, yeah, funny that, Dave. Aye.
Yeah.
Of course. So, Dave, I would normally have a funny story at the end of this podcast, but Dave, I'm not doing it because I'm scunnered with the team. I'm scunnered with the way the season's collapsed. I know we've still got a Scottish Cup to play for. It's going to be a massive game. I know theoretically we can still win this league, but Dave, as we've said, it's just, I don't see it.
If there's anything to cheer you up, Derek, I actually feel slightly more positive after doing this podcast tonight, speaking to you about everything that's been happening. I am not saying that I'm positive enough to think that we're going to go on this incredible run and beat every single team. But, you know, reflecting back on previous games and stuff like that, I just, you know, I've just got a wee bit of hope that we can just find some bit of form in there just to go on. Starting on Sunday, which is going to be a massive game against Hearts, and we've got an excellent record against Hearts. I'm not trying to jinx us, but I do feel slightly more positive tonight than I did after last night. So I don't know if that's down to you, Derek, or it's just me talking absolute nonsense, but I do feel slightly better. I know that you're probably not thinking the same as me, and you're probably still as negative on the team as you were, but I just think that there's been too much has happened since the new manager has came in for us to at least get a few more performances until the end of the season.
Dave, I've said it before, it's like a therapy session, this podcast, so I should be charging £100 an hour, so if you want to get in contact, it's ireadypodcast@hotmail.com. So, on that note, we will end the podcast. All that's left to say is thanks for listening and goodbye.
Take care, folks. Bye-bye.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
Manchester, brace yourself.
Rangers are coming!
Just make sure I'm recording there.